truth that the European Union hates Europeans. We received a letter from the Commission in which they threatened to reject the Safe Europe Act. They claim that not wanting non-Western immigration goes manifestly contrary, and I repeat, manifestly contrary to the right of non-discrimination and goes against what they call European values. The mask is off.
They're openly saying wanting to protect our cultures from being replaced is racist, while at the same time, every single left-wing initiative for open borders just get passed through within days. The safe and legal access to Europe for refugees, the Europe without borders, the initiative for the rights of non-citizens in Europe were all just fine for the European Commission.
The Commission gives every single migrant that asks a key to our home, but it denies us, the native peoples of Europe, the right to defend ourselves, not even against the murder of our children. This isn't hypocrisy. It's their true face. They are saying it themselves. They don't want Europe to belong to the Europeans. They are saying that even claiming that there is such a thing as the ethnocultural identity or continuity of our peoples, that that in and of itself is racist. Our mere existence is racist to them.
But of course, we don't accept that unelected bureaucrats like Ursula von der Leyen decide whether Europeans have a right to exist in Europe. So our response is clear. We are not backing down. We are not taking one word back of the Safe Europe Act. We are doubling down.
We are naive. We saw this coming. That's why we created our very own infrastructure. And so now we have a plan. We are one step ahead of them. When they really do reject our proposal, we have our next step ready. We will become their worst nightmare. And of course, those of you who already signed up on our homepage will be the first to know what our next steps will be. Because if there is one thing that I know for sure, it is that the Safe Europe Act is not just an initiative. It has grown into a movement.
About 400,000 European citizens have already signed our campaign. And even more remarkable, 100,000, every fourth, has already pledged to become active in our campaign. You've heard that right. 100,000 Europeans want to become active in the Safe Europe Act, and this number should shock the bureaucrats in Brussels. And we will show them that with or without the permission, we are going to reach the 1 million. And we promise you, we are going to make your voices heard.
And so with the help of that army of volunteers, you will soon be seeing posters, flyers, stickers, you name it, of the Safe Europe Act in European cities, the very cities that we are trying to save. That is why Brussels is afraid. They know what is coming, and that is why they are trying to shut us down.
We are not waiting for the invitation. On the 15th of July, we will go to Brussels, and we're taking all of your signatures with us. We know that rational arguments don't convince them. The only thing that convinces them is the sheer amount and the number. The silent majority needs to get active. We need your help. You can assure them that most of Europeans want remigration, that the majority of Europeans want to survive.
Sign it now. Share it. Convince your friends and family. Because only together can we make this movement too big to ignore. Only together can we make remigration happen, and only together can we save Europe.
That's a Save Europe Act, Eva Vlaardinger-Brook, as well as some other really great activists there in Europe. It's not a coincidence, folks, that this is all happening at exactly the same time. At exactly the same time that Europe is being overrun and having their laws changed to allow a bunch of hostile foreigners to take over and dominate that nation, at the exact same time that it's happening in America, and at exactly the same time both Europe and America and Australia and New Zealand and Canada and anywhere else the white European diaspora is also getting digital ID laws and biometric identification laws. It's not a coincidence, folks, because it's an attack. It's not an accident. They aren't just trying their best and failing. They're trying to eradicate a race of people, because that race of people came up with human rights that happened to be a barrier to their total domination of humanity. We'll be right back with Peter.
This is an emergency transmission from FEMA Region 6 in occupied North America.
There is a war. It's happening now. It will decide the fate of humanity. The time has come to choose sides. If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance. Share the links now at alexjoneslive.com.
Alex Jones is back. The info war continues at alexjoneslive.com. And you can follow us on X at Real Alex Jones and on Rumble at The Alex Jones Show Live. Plus, you can download the app, alexjonesapp.com. So check it out now and let the deep state globalists know we will never be silenced.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Third hour is on. This is War Room Live. I'm your host, Harrison Smith, coming to you live on this Tuesday afternoon, the 30th of June, 2026. We are on, of course, the Alex Jones Network. You can find us at alexjoneslive.com. And I'm very happy to welcome my guest, Peter Brimelow. He can be found on X at Peter Brimelow, peterbrimelow.com as well. And of course, Mr. Brimelow, you have been fighting the fight to preserve European homelands and European character for a very long time. And the birthright citizenship decision by the Supreme Court is just the latest blow to your mission, my mission, to just maintain our existence in this world. I loved your tweet. You didn't call it I'm not sure if it was a retweet or what, but you called it the birthright citizenship atrocity. It's not a decision. It wasn't a ruling. This is an atrocity. I completely agree. Welcome to the show, sir.
Thanks for having me on, Harrison. Yes, it was a 5-4 decision, so it's not as bad as all the catastrophic acts of judicial imperialism, like gay marriage decision, or the Brown versus Board, which were unanimous, or even Roe, you know, which was unanimous. But it is going to trigger a huge. The reason I like this is that, you know, we've now finally got to what Sun Tzu called death ground. You know, the American right, in fact, the American nation has to fight it. It has no alternative, otherwise it will be liquidated.
Yeah, well, and you know, I share that with you. Like, I'm upset at this. Obviously, I think it's wrong. I think it's wrong on the face of it. I think it's absurd. I don't even understand the actual argument to allow this. It seems entirely based on feelings and not wanting to make foreigners feel bad that they're not American. I mean, the whole thing's absurd. But I'm having trouble. It's like, but of course they're going to make this decision. But of course they're going to allow birthright citizenship to continue. Why wouldn't they? I mean, this is in line with the destruction of our countries that's gone on totally unabated for the last several decades. So I was not surprised by this, and I'm having a hard time even being upset by it, because it's like, of course they're going to put this final nail in our coffin. I mean, you certainly weren't surprised by this decision, were you?
Well, you could see it was going, everybody said it was going in a bad direction. And of course, basically the four women who ruled in favor of birthright citizenship, they basically tried to write it into the Constitution, which it wasn't before at all. Five women, if you count John Roberts, it was obviously just a complete coward, and didn't want to face the uproar if he actually ruled the right way. We started VDA.com, which, as you know, Harrison, was the website, immigration patriot website I founded after we were purged from National Review. I founded it in 1999. We've been writing about this for 25 years. And so, from my point of view, this is absolutely terrific, because when we started writing about the law of birthright citizenship, it was completely unheard of. It was an issue that nobody knew anything about, apparently, and certainly not the average Republican. But now they do. There's no way around it, and it's become a political issue. And this is the great thing about one of the things they've done is, apparently, there's some dispute about this, they've precluded the ability of Congress to get out of this legislatively by redefining the terms through legislation. They will have to go to a constitutional amendment. But of course, I think that's absolutely terrific, because it means there's going to be a fist fight in two-thirds of the states of the country. And the Democrats are going to have to stand up and justify, why is it okay for Chinese women to fly into Both tourism. Why is it okay for them to fly into California, have a baby, turn around and go back? There's apparently 1.5 million Chinese now who technically have American citizenship. What are they going to do? Are they, well, you know, they can come in here at any time, whenever they want. It's a complete racket, and it has to be stopped. And the majority opinion made no attempt to address this.
Yeah, and you know, them coming to California, that would be one thing. The craziest thing is they get to go to like an island in Guam right off the coast of China,
right.
You know, get born
right.
there, go back a couple days later, and they're as American as you or I. I mean, it's completely absurd. It's this is why I'm like, I have trouble even talking about it, because it's just on the face of it, such a suicidal thing for a country to do. And we seem to be the only, at least sizable country that actually does this. Although, I mean, does the UK
you know,
have
if I can interrupt,
please.
A lot of common law countries, like Britain, for example, had birthright citizenship until they realized what was going on, and they stopped it. And that's really the issue here, you know. I mean, the Supreme Court is not God, despite what the liberals think. If it rules the wrong way, it can be reversed by legislation, in this case, a constitutional amendment. That's what happened with income tax. I mean, the Supreme Court found federal income tax unconstitutional. So they passed a constitutional amendment, and we got income tax. And that's what's going to happen here. But the thing I really like is the fight that's going to develop over it. Mm. Because the Democrats are going to have to justify a lot of utterly absurd things, which they're willing to justify, but they would have much preferred it to be swept under the carpet.
Well, and they're not exactly that, you know, consistent with their decisions. It's why it's always kind of confused or, you know, uncertain when we're coming up to a vote. They don't seem to be actually guided by any principle or foundation in law. Obviously, right. This has been a problem for a long time. And I remember not really understanding this in like high school and stuff. My dad would talk about it. He'd say the Supreme Court is writing law and they're not supposed to do that. But that's sort of what you're highlighting,
good
right?
Good for him. Good for him, by the
right.
way. That was a perception. You know, I was on the Hill. In the early years of the Reagan administration, I worked for Senator Hatch on the Judiciary Committee. And I remember one of the people in the Reagan judge-picking operation telling me that, you know, when they were dealing with all these Republican lawyers, they had absolutely no conception of what was going on, what the left was doing. They thought that if you were a judge, you just have to call balls and strikes. But that's not the way the left judges thinks about it at all. They think you get in there, you've got the power, you just rewrite the law.
Right.
The average Republican lawyer across the country had no conception of this at all. Now they do. The Federalist Society has done a lot of good work, but the problem is the Federalist Society is no good on immigration, so it wasn't vetting its candidates like Amy Coney Barrett for what they thought about immigration.
Yeah, and I mean, that's such a fascinating aspect of this. And again, so, I mean, what happens here, do you think? Do you think there's going to be a congressional amendment? Because I do like seeing that there's almost this like revival, I think, with the Epstein list. I mean, that was the executive branch not doing something. So the legislative branch came in and sort of forced their hand. And I love seeing that. It's like, okay, this is the checks and balances that our government is supposed to operate by. Are we seeing a revival of that? Is the Congress actually looking around going, hey, these people are usurping all the power it's supposed to be to us? I'd love to see them gather that power back in again and actually exert oversight over the intelligence agencies and, you know, actually pass laws instead of delegating it to the Supreme Court. But then you look at the Republican Party now, they can't even pass the SAVE Act. They can't get anything done. So, I mean, how likely is it, do you think, that this actually gets solved legislatively?
As I say, it's death ground. If they don't do it, then the nation is going to be liquidated. But I think it is likely. I think that people are much more aware of what's going on here. I see that, for example, the head of the Heritage Foundation, Kevin Roberts, has called for a constitutional amendment in the wake of this stupid decision. It's not a Dred Scott decision. It's precipitating a civil war. But for Roberts to do that, for the Heritage Foundation DC to do that, is a remarkable thing, because that's at the heart of the conservative establishment. And if they don't want to punt on this issue, or they realize they can't punt on this issue, you know, a lot of other legislators and so on are going to go along.
And it seems like, I mean, obviously the lesson I keep learning over and over again, or that I wish everybody else would learn over and over, is like, we were not harsh enough before. We played a clip yesterday of a congressman all the way back in, I think it was like 2010 or something, and his constituency was objecting to the Haitians being dropped off in their neighborhood. And he was a Republican, but he was going, well, you know, it's like we might not like it, but hey, it's the law. We got to do what we got to do. And obviously there's right. this fear of being called racist that, you know, stops him from actually supporting, you know, his own people. And looking back, it's like, man, those people were not intense enough. You know, the objections were kind of like, hey, we're not sure we really like this. And nobody really asked us. It's like going back in time, they should have been screaming and tearing the roof down by the rafters, seeing what's happened to their town in the meantime. But I guess my question is, how do we get through to the Republicans who still have a fear of racism, still feel like they're the bad guy for saying no? My thing is like, you know, me as an American, I would never go to Japan and stay there and then be mad if they kicked me out. How do we get across to people? Like, there's nothing mean about this. There's nothing racist about this. This is about our country and our preservation. How do we get over the fear people have of just taking the side of Americans or white people in particular? How do we break through that fear?
Well, I recommend relentless ridicule. I think that's, yeah. that helps a lot. You know, these Congress critics, they do react to criticism. I mean, as I told you, Harrison, you know, I worked on the Hill for a couple of years, and it was very interesting because we think the U.S. senator is a powerful figure and is shaping the agenda, but they think that they're just trapped on this raft in right. the middle of the ocean and in the middle of the dark of the night, and these huge waves come out of nowhere, and they have to pull the raft around so that they can get its bows into the water, into the wave, and get over it. And then there's another damn wave coming the opposite direction. It's all public opinion. I mean, they're terrified of this kind of thing, and so we just have to keep, you know, relentlessly ridiculing them. I mean, obviously the left are fanatics, but the average Republican congressman is just trying to keep his head above water.
But, you know, as you pointed out, the left really does. They see if they obtain a position, they are not, you know, submerging their own desires in the responsibility they've been given. They see it as a license. They go, oh, I'm in charge now. Great. It's going to go my way. Forget what the job supposed to, you know, is. Again, this is another thing where it's like, how do we get across to, because the problem is that creates a feedback loop, because then if you're not doing that, you're the sucker, you're the idiot, you're the one playing by the rules, they're you know, eating your lunch. So it's like, if we're going to have this open system, we have to ruthlessly police it to make sure that judges or anybody in a position of power is not abusing that power for their own desires. Because the only other option is, well, they're doing it, we'll do it even more. And that's how the whole system breaks down, right? How do we stop that feedback loop from taking over?
I think one of the problems is that Republicans typically don't sit around thinking of awful things they can do to their opponents. True. Whereas Democrats do. I mean, for example, they're obviously eager to make Puerto Rico and D.C. a state and things like that. We should have been, the Republicans should have been thinking about, well, why don't we just throw Puerto Rico out of the Union altogether and make it independent, which is what the Czechs did, the Slovaks, when they got fed up with them, all the Singaporeans to the Malaysians. That doesn't seem to have occurred to anybody on the Republican side. There are some people who do sit around and think about terrible things they can do to their opponents. I've always been very intrigued by Daniel Horowitz at The Blaze, you know. He has a whole series of things that he's put out today saying, well, why don't we just stop appropriating money to give birth certificates to babies who are born here from illegal mothers. If they don't technically have the birth certificate, they're not going to be able to vote, you know. So why don't we just do that? And for that matter, you know, the Congress could simply stop appropriating money for some of these courts that have gotten out of control. For example, the D.C. circuit appears to be completely controlled by communists. So defund it. You know, it can be done. It's just that people don't think about these things. You have to have sort of vicious, mean people sitting around thinking about these things. And that's what we were trying to do at VDare.com.
Yeah. Well, and the weird thing is our system requires that to a lot of ways. You know, the classic things you hear Republicans say, you better not do that or else you're not going to like it if we do it to you. Don't set the precedent. But the Democrats do the thing, and then Republicans never pay them back. It's like, you know, you actually have to do it to them now, because that's the precedent setting. Otherwise, they're just going to keep doing whatever the hell they want, and Republicans are going to continue to be impotent. And I agree. Same thing with, like, when the Democrats say we're going to pack the Supreme Court. To me, the only appropriate response to that is to pack it first before they can do it. It's like, you know, what are they going to say? You're not allowed to do that. Only we are. No, if you do it, we get to do it. That's the way our system is supposed to operate. But the Republicans are just universally cowards. It's absurd.
I know people we both respect, like Scott Greer and so on, say that a civil war is impossible in the U.S. Well, my position, we're already in a civil war.
Right.
I mean, for example, our experience of VDare.com at the hands of Letitia James, New York Attorney General, for that matter, President Trump's experience. There's no rule of law in New York State. Yeah. Jonathan Turley called it the land that law forgot. And similarly, Minnesota, for example, is obviously not obeying the... It was obviously in a state of insurrection.
Right.
When ICE was trying to deport all these people. And I'm extremely sorry that Trump didn't drive through and declare the Insurrection Act and put Governor Waltz and Mayor Frey in jail, you know, and run on that issue. But, you know, well, guess what? We've got the Birthright Citizenship Amendment thing to run on now. And I think it could help him enormously in the midterms. They should just make it an issue and make it the up and down issue that people have to vote on, because it's fantastically unpopular. I mean, people think when people it's explained to people, which of course it almost never is, they think it's just nuts. Why is it that illegal immigrants can cross the border and immediately have a child, and that child's a citizen, and that means you can't deport the parents as practical matter and all that kind of thing? Have the Democrats justify this?
No, it's completely insane. And of course, the most insane part about birthright citizenship is it's like, okay, you can be a citizen or your kid can be a citizen as long as you break our laws. It's like, as long as you violate our sovereignty, then you can be a citizen. I mean, it's so backwards. It's ridiculous. And of course, Mamdani would be another one, right? He makes a video after a Supreme Court decision. And this is another thing about the Supreme Court and the Democrats. The Supreme Court will decide something and the Democrats just ignore it. They just don't care. DEI,
Quite right.
I mean, there's video after video, undercover video in universities, and they go, you know, the Supreme Court outlawed DEI. Are you guys still doing it? And they go, yeah, of course we're still doing it. No one's stopping us. We're going to keep doing it. Mamdani going, well, the Supreme Court
just under a different name.
Yeah, well, if that even, right? Yeah, if they, I mean, maybe they'll change the name, maybe not. Nothing happens regardless, right? And Mamdani goes, yeah, you know, they said TPS expired, but I'm not listening to them. And it's like, you've got to crush this. I mean, it's not tyrannical. Right. To make the states abide by the federal government. That's why we have a federal government. So, you know,
is it a nation of laws or not is the issue.
Exactly.
Is it a nation of laws or not? And in New York State, it's not a nation. It's not under law. I was very disappointed today with the Supreme Court's apparent decision not to take up the case of this woman who claims that Trump raped her 1,000 years ago on a day she can't remember. In that case, the New York State legislature, they've essentially passed an act of a bill of attainder against Trump.
Right.
They changed the law so that she could get around the statute of limitations. Then as soon as she filed, they changed it back. And this thing has been in the New York courts forever. And the judges entertain it and won't throw it out. Now the Supreme Court has refused to review the... this $5 million judgment against Trump. I mean, the whole thing's obviously absurd, and it was is a legal atrocity. Now, just because the Supreme Court refuses to review something doesn't mean that it's ruling on its merits. Mm-hmm. It doesn't want to get involved into that time. There's a limited number of things it can take on. So it's not necessarily a rejection of Trump's arguments. But on the other hand, how is he going to get out of paying this $5 million? I'm sure he's thinking about it. But the whole thing is completely disgraceful. And I don't see any solution to the problem of these blue states except just going on in and putting them under federal control eventually to get the judicial system straight. Then I don't see any solution to the problem of... all these Biden judges who appointed, you know,
right.
Who are obviously illiterate and stupid and ruled entirely on the basis of racial bias and so on. It's just going to have to be a wholesale purge of them. I mean, just impeach all of them and get rid of them.
And that's it's another aspect where the Supreme Court came in and said district judges cannot do nationwide injunctions against, you know, executive orders, but they do it anyway. So it's like we fight it all the way up to the Supreme Court. We win. The leftist ignores it. The right doesn't enforce it. We cannot win. We can't get a victory. Meanwhile, whatever comes out of the Supreme Court.
This is an issue where I see that there are a couple of cases where Republicans, legislators have introduced into Congress attempts to impeach Biden judges.
Right.
There's that woman who was having sex with the local police chief or something in a chamber. They're apparently going to try and impeach her. Now, I would prefer it to be on a different issue, right. Although she's obviously, a really bad case. Apparently, she never rules on civil cases. She just lets her clerks do it, do all the work.
Well,
which is a problem, of course. When you see these Supreme Court justices, a lot of the work is just done by the clerks.
Yep, and
who are all left-wing loonies, of course.
They are, and I mean the judges themselves. We've looked up some of the biographies, and it's like she lived in Tobago or wherever until she was 25. Then she spent 5 years at an NGO suing the government to let in more legal immigrants, and then Biden put her in a judge robe, and now she's in charge. And it's like, why does our country do this? Why is anybody?
I think there's an excellent case, Harrison, for you can't be the president of the U.S. if you're an immigrant. You have to be native born. Well, I think there's a case for extending that to judges, because I think about half of the D.C. circuit is immigrants.
Yeah.
Because basically the Biden administration couldn't find enough people of color with the minimum qualifications to be a judge. I think that's something that probably has to be done. It's just make clear that if you're a federal judge, you have to be native born. This means I can't be a federal judge, of course.
Well, that's
but
and that, of course, makes
that's probably
you
a good thing.
That makes you infuriated, right? And it's unfair to you. And how dare we keep you from this, right? Again, that's what I don't understand. You're an immigrant. It's like if we told you, "Hey, sorry, buddy, you're not from here. You can't be a judge." It wouldn't make you mad.
Yeah,
you wouldn't get pissed off,
people
right?
Completely wrong about this. Yeah, people are completely wrong about the way immigrants think about this. And this is true even for Hispanic. When I was at Vidal, we had a writer, Alan Wall, who was married to a Mexican woman. He would always say that the way to deal with the Hispanic vote is to treat them like Americans, because they don't have this pathological loyalty to the ethnic group if they're approached right. They know the whole system is broken and stupid and ridiculous. I mean, I knew it was when I started going through it in 1970. You could see the whole system was broken. It's just that the only people who don't know this are American intellectuals.
And I mean, they know, right? I mean, they know, and they're okay with it, right? They're not blind to the effects.
Well, they're not even aware of the arguments,
right?
Not even aware of the flaws, because they don't want to know.
It's a very troubling situation we find ourselves in these days.
I think it's great. I think as I say, it's like it may precipitate a civil war. But the Trump has a real issue to run on here, which is we've got to stop illegal aliens for having children here, having them become citizens and expropriating your tax monies and voting in your communities. I think it's a terrific issue. And I think he could win the midterms on it.
Well, I hope so. We haven't seen the deportation numbers that we've needed. I mean, we really need a wholesale reorganization of this system.
Harrison, they're not as bad. I mean, if you look at the immigrant workforce population, it is falling like a rock. And that's because of self-deportation, which is what happened during Operation Wetback. It was self-deportation in the 50s. It was So I don't completely write off what Trump's been doing here, or somebody's been doing. Maybe it's Stephen Miller.
Wow. All right. White pill to Peter Brimelow. We'll be right back. We'll talk more. And I want to get into what happened to VDare, of course. Sort of similar stories between VDare and InfoWars, unfairly targeted because we're right and compelling. Peter Brimelow joins me again on the other side. Don't go anywhere, folks. We'll be back in just a minute or two.
But first, listen to me very carefully. I've got all these studies and articles out. Breastfeeding protects babies against ADHD, autism, low IQs. The brain's up to one-third smaller if they never get mother's milk. Breastfeeding protects baby against risk of ADHD. And another major study, new study strongly links Merck's Gardasil HPV vaccine to all sorts of neurological disorders. Why is corn syrup in so many American infant formulas? Some of them are up to 70%. So deadly, so bad. Plus synthetic vitamins and minerals, which are actually toxic. Adverse effects of infant formula made with corn syrup, solids on the development of eating behaviors in Hispanic children, definitely linked to the obesity and diabetes and all the rest of it. Corn syrup and formula, absolutely not safe. Well, what's the opposite of corn syrup and fake milk? It's colostrum. Notice hospitals tell people, oh, give your baby milk the first few weeks, you know, fake milk. Oh, don't worry about breastfeeding. And then the mother's milk never comes in. So then about half the mothers never have their milk come in. So they go right on the formula. Formula, high-tech sounding name. Ooh, trust the science. And all the studies are the brains are much smaller, lower IQs, all these serious problems. Because your brain's made out of fat mainly, and you need the mother's fat to do that. But the colostrum has all the mother's immunity. It's a natural vaccine. All these peptides, all these super nutrients. Well, I already have colostrum. I take some of it. My mom's really into it. One day I came over to her house and I gave her two canisters of it and told her, tell me what you think of this. But I forget about it. It's my dad's birthday last year. We're at an Italian restaurant. And she starts saying, and she never wants to be on air. She said, I'll go on air for this. She goes, look at my hair. He goes, it's gray. He has a lot of it, but it's gray. She goes, look, it's coming back in blonde. Look at this. Look at this. She goes, and look at David. He was totally bald. He's been on a few months. It's literally hairs coming in. And if you look it where it was already, it's coming in brown and it's gray here. This is insane. This is way better. I want more of that. I want more of that. I said, okay, I'll get it for you. You can buy it at alexjonesstore.com.
And a back problem that I've had since Alex was born is almost completely gone after 50, however many years. And my hair is much thicker than it has been. And I have good hair anyway, but it's much thicker. And this is brand new.
Turn darker.
And darker.
So you need to get it. It's buy one, get one free. Until tomorrow night, because I really didn't plug it. The sale launched Friday. Bovine colostrum, buy one, get one free right now. Never seen my mom on air before. She said, no, I'll do it. So I said, well, you say that on camera. So she repeated some of it on camera. You've been on colostrum now 2 months. And we have the very best at thealexjonesstore.com. And I'm serious. So, Mom, you got to listen. The products are amazing.
Well, this one, like I said, I don't do testimonials. There's a lot of good products, but this is the first one that I can go, whoa, it really.
Can you put that on?
Tell us what happened.
I have been on the colostrum for about 2 or 3 months, and a back problem that I've had since Alex was born is almost completely gone after 50, however many years. And my hair is much thicker than it has been. And I have good hair anyway, but it's much thicker. And this is brand new.
Turn darker. That's how good this is. And she's been on colostrum forever. She was a master swimmer and, you know, triathlete. And she's in super good shape at 76. But the point is that she swears by it. And she looked healthy before, but she looks even younger now. And she gobbles it. She takes way more than one scoop a day. We got it. You owe it to yourself. It's not just good for your hair and skin and all the rest of it. Imagine what it's doing internally. This is the superfood of superfood from the mama mammal to the baby. This is the Uber milk. Bovine colostrum. Buy one, get one free right now at thealexjonesstore.com. And it funds the second American Revolution worldwide.
Reality starts here. AlexJonesLive.com. Share the link. Spread the word.
Days, weeks, and even years ahead of the news cycle, AlexJonesLive.com is tomorrow's news today.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is War Room Live. I'm your host, Harrison Smith. I do want to remind you that the summer kickoff sale is on right now. You get buy one, get one free on Bovine Colostrum Plus at thealexjonesstore.com. Zeolite Detox is also buy one, get one 50% off. You can also get buy one, get one free for the Shilajit Complex Capsules. Buy one, get the second one free. Ultimate Life Force, buy one, get the second one 50% off. Massive discounts on some of our best-selling products. And of course, you keep us on air and in the fight, which, of course, is increasingly difficult in this very unfriendly legal environment that we are constantly fighting back against. And, of course, my guest is Peter Brimelow, who founded VDARE and is no stranger to the methods by which the United States government will shut down what they consider to be unfriendly publications. And I want to talk about that. Obviously, we're talking about the Supreme Court decision about birthright citizenship as well. And sticking with that, I just want to read a few posts here and get your comment on it, Mr. Brimelow. The first one is this. The author of the Citizenship Clause in the 14th Amendment, Senator Jacob Howard, literally explained during the debates that it would obviously not apply to illegal aliens or foreigners not allegiant to the United States, saying, quote, This will not, of course, include persons born in the United States who are foreigners, aliens, who belong to the families of ambassadors or foreign ministers accredited to the government of the United States, but will include every other class of person. So, again, I'm no Supreme Court justice, but I do speak English, and this sounds pretty obvious that they did not intend for our borders to just be a, get citizenship free by crossing line. I mean, does this matter, Peter? I mean, does this have any impact, the intention of the law in the first place, or is it just up to the Supreme Court entirely?
I mean, it's a point of pride among legal realists, critical legal theory people. They disregard the intent and they disregard the letter of the law. They just write what they just say what they want to say.
Right.
Now, of course, the question is how long can they maintain the confidence of the public if they do that? And I think that 70 years of judicial supremacy, judicial imperialism like this, dating all the way back to Brown versus Board, is eroding people's respect for the law in general and the Supreme Court in particular. But, the debate has now moved beyond that. The question is not really what the founders meant by this, but do Americans have a right to amend this to change the situation? And the answer, of course, is that they do. And the way to do it is through a constitutional amendment. There have been lots of them, and this is obviously time for another one. Of course, it would be a tremendous battle, and you have to get three-quarter states on board and everything. But on the other hand, as I keep saying, the Democrats are going to have to defend these ridiculous situations that are developing as a result of this law. And they can't defend it. That's why they fought so hard to keep it out of politics for so many years.
Right. And just sort of assert that this is just the established law. This is one of the absurd things that you're talking about from Libs of TikTok. SCOTUS just greenlit this scam. Hundreds of companies provide birth tourism for foreign moms who want U.S. citizen babies. So, I mean, this is industrialized. There are more than 500 firms in China alone that take people from China to America to give birth so that they get citizenship. I mean, but I guess it's illegal for us to stop this industry. We are now compelled to allow these people to take advantage of the loophole like this. Again, where is the reasoning? Where is the logic? How are they pulling the wool over everybody's eyes like this? What is the argument? I mean, that's what I don't get.
This is the jugular of the Great Replacement. The Democrats are in the business of electing a new people, and they can't. Birthright citizenship is the principal way in which they're doing it. I think there's something like 200,000 to 300,000 children a year born to illegal aliens, and the Democrats think they're all going to vote Democratic. Now they may not be right, but that is what they think. They're electing a new people, and so they will fight the death to keep this. And I say, good, but let them fight the death. Let's kill them.
Well, you want to fight? You better believe you've got one. Yeah, I think I've heard that before. And look, where we're going is not a great place. This is a schedule for San Diego's 4th of July celebration, Independence Day here in America. This is what it's going to be. Guests arrive in networking around 5 p.m. Then we have the tribal intimate blessing welcoming to the land, then the land acknowledgement, then the tribal invocation, then the national and black national anthem, then the local tribe community stories, then Latino community stories, then Asian American, Native Hawaiian, Pacific Islander community stories, then LGBTQIA community stories, then the black and African community stories, and then closing remarks and fireworks. So, again, on the day that's supposed to celebrate America, that's supposed to celebrate our Independence Day, it is nothing but a diversity festival of a bunch of un-American people and gay people also, I guess. Throw that in there for a good minute. As long as you cannot create white babies, you are embraced by the left on this July 4th, Independence Day 2026. I mean, I see a problem with this, Peter. I like living in a country that has a culture, that has a feels like an extended family, not this weird hodgepodge of mutually hateful groups all competing for dominance. I mean, this is just such a, and we're already here. It's only going to get worse. I saw this and I'm just like, what is even the point of celebrating Independence Day if that's your celebration?
Well, I think that is what they think. And, of course, the terrible thing about this is that San Diego used to be a city dominated by the Navy. You know, my son was in Camp Pendleton there when he was in the Marines. And the Republicans seem to have succeeded in losing control of it.
Yeah.
Of course, it's their own fault. I mean, the California Republican Party is completely, utterly useless. And they should have got behind Proposition 187 and so on and stopped this, fought to stop this illegal influx. But it's the it's the demographic shift that's really caused the problem in California.
Yeah.
And
in New York.
You know, the Republican Party is simply not doing enough about it.
Yeah, and it's again, it's like even if they're just motivated by their own power, like don't they understand that their constituents are the ones being destroyed? And why would they not want to fight back against that? You know, another interesting aspect of this, and I'd love to get your take on it, is I see this as an opportunity for racial solidarity. In fact, I've talked to Black Americans. They're not fans of Somalians coming in and taking their welfare or whatever else. Is this not an opportunity to say, hey, look, we might have differences, but we're both American and these people are trying to take our stuff and we can come together and fight back against this? And guys, we can play clip 16 as B-roll. But this she looks mixed race, but she's an African-American woman and she's walking around in IHOP filming herself going, this is a takeover. These damn Somalians are taking over. Well, what's your take on that? The fact that I think this could be an opportunity for coming together of every race to say we're American, they're not. It's our team versus theirs. Why can't we come together on this topic? I think this could be an opportunity for outreach. What do you think, Peter?
I mean, that's true, and we already see that working with Hispanics, the Tejanos, for example, the Mexican Americans who've been living in Texas for 100 years since the Mexican Revolution are obviously critical, unhappy about the recent influx of Hispanics who are not necessarily Mexican at all. Because, as you know, this Hispanic term is a misnomer. There's lots of tensions between the different groups there. But really, the fundamental point, I think, that the Republican Party, the GOP, or as we used to call it at VDare.com, the GAP, the Generic American Party, has to face it. It has to rally its white base. And you never see articles about this, what's happened to the white vote. I was looking at an article in the Washington Post yesterday about how Republicans are hopeful about South Texas because the Tejanos are getting fed up with the, you know, with the immigration and the fact that the Democrat Party is black dominant and so on. But they're not asking what's happened to the white vote in Texas, which, by the way, does vote very heavily Republican, which is why Texas is still Republican, unlike California. You know, the funny thing about this is the demographics of California and demographics of Texas are not that different. The difference, the reason it's that the electoral results are so different is that Texas whites vote as Southern whites in general do together. And in California, they don't. It's not unusual for Republican candidates statewide to lose the white vote. You're not going to carry California if you can't carry the white vote. So I think that whereas it's great that these various groups are rallying around America, fundamentally the thing to do is, the fundamental point is that the white vote has to be mobilized. And that's not happened yet. It's been slow to develop, and Trump did it to a certain extent, but not really as powerful as he should have done. I mean, I think he got about 57-58% of the white vote. Democrats regularly get 80-90% of their constituencies' votes. I mean, I think in the case of the American blacks, it was well over 90% vote Democratic.
Yeah. Yeah, well, demographics are destiny, and they know it as well as we do. You can look at what happened in New York, voting for a bunch of socialists. Of course, you have Ben Shapiro blaming that on college-educated, useless white people, I think was his quote, when in reality, no, this is a direct effect of the demographic replacement of white people by non-white people. And that's just a statistical reality that, you know, everybody should sort of come to terms with. And do you agree with me? I see it as almost a sort of inverted mirror white supremacy, where white people are afraid to admit that white people need help or deserve consideration. You know, it's kind of there's kind of this underlying idea of like, well, we're white, so let's not, you know, talk about it too much, or we don't need to worry about our country being taken over. We're white after all. Nothing bad will happen to us. And I'm just constantly being like, no, there's nothing special about you, white people, that makes you, you know, invincible, right? There's nothing about white people that just we're going to be here forever and thrive forever. No, we can be destroyed and we don't deserve to be destroyed. So we should stand up for ourselves. Do you understand where I'm coming from with that? That there's this weird like.
Right. There's a tremendous amount of white guilt.
Yeah.
Among whites. And also, you know, the problem is that they're not actually racist, you know, so they're not inclined to vote against. The Republican Party has a suicidal habit of nominating black candidates for various things. Most recently, West Virginia, but across the border, they had a black gubernatorial candidate who was actually Jamaican immigrant. It's the worst possible candidate that they could have run if they were trying to develop as a national conservative party. For some reason, the Republican operatives, and I think also the donors, find this very attractive. Right. And no amount of being refuted. I mean, there must be a dozen cases now of Republicans nominating black candidates who have promptly defeated. They never get the black vote. They just don't want to learn. And that's a huge problem. I don't know what's going to happen in Florida. Do you? I mean, is Barron Donald going to make it in Florida?
I have no idea, but that was the exact example I was thinking of when you said that. Because, yeah, they you know, Republicans really are obsessed with, like, trying to disprove our enemies that we're not really racist. They don't care. Like, they don't – the people calling you racist don't care if you are racist. They don't think you are. They just know it's a weapon to use against you. So I totally agree.
Exactly, yes.
Yeah, why not, you know, take your own side and do it unapologetically? And it's – in a weird way, it almost seems like the Democrats have learned that where – and they're pretty open about it. They're like, hey, we just need to run candidates who are just like, I want to help working families. I'm a normal white guy. Hi. And of course, that's what happened with Spanberger in Virginia. Is she just presented herself as I'm just a normal mom and I just want to help working families. And she gets in and she governs like Chairman Mao. So they seem to have figured this right out and are just running very sort of boilerplate people because they know, I think, that the American people are just like, we're just kind of sick of politics. We don't want radicals on either side. We just want to vote for somebody who can sort of be the manager and just kind of manage things by the number. Democrats are running radicals that present themselves as just sort of your normal run-of-the-mill Democrat.
Well, however, you have to say Democrats have very serious problems too. And one of them is that, you know, anti-Zionism has really emerged as a force on the Democratic left. Now, it's fueled by these third world immigrants that they were stupid enough to import. But there's a significant number of Jews who voted for Mandami. I think about a third of the Jewish vote went for Mandami. So that's a huge problem for them navigating that because they are going to be driven much further to the left. And it's not just the left in terms of economic redistribution and helping the working class. It's all these other crazy things that they're just interested in, like transgenderism and so on. Something that they're all going to have to handle in a general election, and go to Middle America and try to talk the way out of that.
Yeah, and of course they have the media sort of helping them with this. The media is not even going to report on, you know, Abigail Spanberger, you know, gets elected as a seemingly moderate and then just starts passing all these insane bills. I go to the local news and they're not reporting on it. So, you know, a normal Democrat goes, oh, I'll vote for the nice white lady, and they vote for her, and then they don't even know that she's passing these insane laws and just, like, changing the rule to let rapists out of prison early. And it's just like there's no even sense to passing this stuff, but they do, and then they hide it from their constituents. It's a very sophisticated, multifaceted operation that they're running here.
Well, this is why in Britain, the Labour Party in Britain is so desperate to suppress the internet. And they produced this really radical legislation. For example, it's not going to let kids under 16 to look at the internet at the same time as they're making 16-year-olds eligible to vote. So how are they going to get their information? And they're apparently going to ban VPNs as well because they know that, you know, whereas you're right, the mainstream media is going to suppress all this stuff. It can't be suppressed on Twitter and on these podcasts and so on.
And you see these
huge numbers that Elon Musk is getting on some of these tweets. This is really driving them crazy.
Because it's an information war. Because they understand that, you know, if people understood the consequences of their programs, they'd be against the program. So they basically will institute something like mass immigration, and then they'll say it's illegal to talk about the fact that the immigrants are raping everybody. They want to cover up the negative consequences, so the program keeps continuing because they want the negative consequences, in my interpretation. But it's an information war, and they know that they need to control the information flow to control how people vote. And at the end of the day, democracy is really just ruled by the media, since that's the way we, you know, interpret the world around us. And it's the reason they targeted InfoWars, and it's the reason they targeted VDare. Can you tell our viewers, maybe if they're not familiar, what happened to VDare? I mean, it was one of my favorite outlets for a long time, and Letitia James got a bee in her bonnet. You know, what happened to y'all?
Well, VDare.com was a website that was focused on the immigration issue very narrowly. I found it at Christmas Eve 1999, went live. And in 2025, we suspended because we were under attack from New York State Attorney General Letitia James. Unfortunately for us, the pro bono lawyer who set us up was barred, admitted to the bar in New York State. And so he registered in New York State. He did it when George Pataki was the Republican governor, and nobody ever heard of Lawfare. But because of that, she can come after us, making all kinds of demands for documentation, and so she hit us with these enormous subpoenas and so on. And just complying with these subpoenas alone was financially ruinous to us. But the other problem we had was that if we had, to the extent that we complied with them, she could have gotten the names of our writers and our donors. And most of our writers were pseudonymous because of the Reign of Terror. And both the writers and the donors, had their names been leaked, and she has a practice of leaking things like this, they would have been fired. People's lives would have been ruined because they gave money or donated to us. So we fought it as hard as we could, and we ran up something between $1 and $2 million in legal costs, and it was we just couldn't sustain it. So we had to suspend the editorial product of VDare.com, although the site is still there, the archives are still there. If you go to VDare.com, you'll see them all, 25 years of immigration patriotism. At the same time, we've been sued. This gets so complicated. One of her thugs, henchmen, gave us a speech to the ADL about the time that she started subpoena us, saying that we know that hate speech, that's us, of course, we're hate speech, is constitutionally protected by the First Amendment. However, he said, there's a way we can get around that by just subpoenaing them to death, just hitting them with lots and lots of subpoenas and exhausting them financially. And that's exactly what he did. So for the last year or so, we've been trying to get some court to pay attention to this. But it proved to be very difficult. The New York State courts are completely corrupt and won't pay attention to it. And we're having a lot of trouble trying to get the federal courts to pay attention to it, too. In the meantime, she's charged both the foundation, the VDare Foundation, and Lydia and myself personally with all kinds of... they're basically highly technical violations to do with did the board vote on this and did the board vote on that and so on. Of course, we're a tiny organization, so it's like with the Heritage Foundation or something, you know, with very elaborate internal procedures and so on. And that's continuing. We were just working on discovery last night to make all kinds of discovery demands, wanting all our financial documents and so on. And the purpose of it is just to bleed us personally to death. As well as the foundation.
And you're not accused of actually committing a crime, right? I mean, this is all just about your
It's coverage, not a crime, right? The civil violations. But she's told the press release says that we misappropriated money. When you actually look at this, that there's no money that went to us. She said we spent $1 million to buy a castle, but $1 million was to buy the castle. And you've been there, Harrison. Was spent by the foundation, which owned the castle. We didn't own the castle, and we were using it for a conference venue because we'd had 15 conferences cancelled on us because Antifa would threaten these big hotels, and the big hotels would immediately cave. So it was entirely legitimate expenditure. And her argument is, well, typically she would say, well, did enough board members vote on this, or when you hired somebody to do something, did you have a bidding process and approach enough other people? You know, it's all technicalities based on the legal stuff. She isn't actually, when you look at it in the charges against us, alleging that we ourselves personally benefit from it financially. That's just what she tells the press. It's to do with the machinations, the details of how you run a 501c3, which are complex. But at the time, we were in compliance because we actually had people making sure we were in compliance. But of course, it didn't make any damn difference. Just to search the contrary, and the New York courts will accept it.
She's a complete menace. And of course, she got elected on the promise to do exactly this. She's not actually going after real crimes being committed every single day in New York City and state. She's going after people like yourself for things that you, I mean, I doubt any company would survive the level of scrutiny she's subjecting you guys to. But VDARE is survived, but it doesn't matter. As you say, it doesn't matter. They're just trying to destroy the organization.
Well, of course, the huge disappointment is these damn judges.
Right.
She lied to the court, Letitia James, about us buying the castle and living there personally. It was a lie. And we were able to show that it was a lie. But she still repeated to the judge. And the judge simply blocked and pasted, copy and pasted what Letitia James said. She didn't even bother to acknowledge our refutation. That's why Richard Spencer has announced that he's convinced we're guilty of something, you know. And of course, he would do anyway because he's a swine. But if you're not used to this kind of thing as a layman, what goes on with judges and their willingness to misrepresent the facts and so on is simply staggering.
Yeah.
Simply staggering. These are not, they're not calling balls and strikes, they're activists.
Oh, trust us, we know. I mean, we've been subjected
to... Yes, of course.
You know, very much what... And
of course.
It's frustrating because you have people go, well, there was a trial, and it's like, yeah, it was called a show trial. Of course they go through the process to make it look like what they're doing is legitimate. They're not just going to come out and say, we're shutting this down corruptly. Like, of course they make it look legitimate, and people fall for that. But look in the details, none of this is legitimate. The cases should have never been open. I'm speaking both about InfoWars and VDARE now. We didn't do anything wrong. It's because of what we say, which makes it a blatant violation of the First Amendment that I know has really done a number to y'all's organization, which is an incredible organization. You guys were right 25 years ago when you started, even more now. And of course, we're seeing that fruit borne out. I think if you can buy a castle for under $2 million, I mean, you should deserve some sort of reward for real estate acumen or something. That castle is
And 55 acres and 3 cottages. Yeah, that's right.
That's an investment right there. That's a tourist spot. But it's just such a shame what they've done to y'all. And I'm just glad that you're continuing to fight the mission that you've been fighting. Again, my guest is Peter Brimelow. Follow him at Peter Brimelow on X, peterbrimelow.com. And his new book, Alien Nation, can be found on Amazon. Thank you so much for joining us today, Mr. Brimelow.
Thanks so much, Harrison. Come and see us soon.
I would love to. I'll stay in your castle before Letitia James steals it from you, the witch. Thank you, everybody, for being here with us. We will see you tomorrow.
A back problem that I've had since Alex was born is almost completely gone after 50, however many years. And my hair is much thicker than it has been. And I have good hair anyway, but it's much thicker. And this is brand new.
Turn darker.
And darker.
And I've told the story. My mother never wants to go on TV, but she did last year. Look, your dad was completely bald, I'm not kidding, and now all this hair is coming in. And hair that was gray started, she showed me at the restaurant, you've seen it, it's coming in brown. It is buy one, get one free, until tomorrow night at midnight central at thealexjonesstore.com.
You've been on colostrum now 2 months, and we have the very best at thealexjonesstore.com, and I'm serious. So, Mom, you got to listen. The products are amazing.
Well, this one, like I said, I don't do testimonials. There's a lot of good products, but this is the first one that I can go, whoa, it really.
Tell us what happened.
I have been on colostrum for about 2 or 3 months, and a back problem that I've had since Alex was born is almost completely gone after 50, however many years. And my hair is much thicker than it has been. And I have good hair anyway, but it's much thicker. And this is brand new.
Turn darker. Yes, ChatGPT, what it's known to do. Upper respiratory tract infections and symptoms reduction. Attenuation of exercise-induced immune suppression. Antiviral and antibacterial effects. Stopping leaky gut. Support for gastrointestinal disorders, which is the whole body. Enhanced recovery and reduced inflammation. Metabolic health, wound healing, and tissue repair. It is bovine colostrum. It is buy one, get one free at theellenshowstore.com. And it funds the Second American Revolution worldwide.
Days, weeks, and even years ahead of the news cycle. AlexJonesLive.com is tomorrow's news today.